Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, TNT Hoop Shoot Around Volume 5, episode Quinny and I just wanted to get on the phone and talk about just some of the series: Boston sweeping Indiana, Milwaukee sweeping Detroit, the Philly and Toronto series both wrapping up last night. Just kind of give you our predictions about the East. Talk a little bit about the Denver and San Antonio series, where San Antonio took a lead last night 3-2 going into San Antonio for Game 6. Didn't really go much into the Houston, Utah, and the Warriors-Clippers series, but more just gave an overview of that series, which probably is going to decide who wins the finals. Then we talked about that OKC-Portland series, where Dame closed it out last night with that 40-foot game winner. Enjoy this conversation that Quiddy and I had. Thank you once again for listening to TNT Hoops. On the line, we have our co-host Quiddy Slanger for our shoot around episode volume 5 this morning. Quiddy, what's good?
What's good, Anson? Fresh early morning, ready to get it cracking. What's good?
Just coming off of that crazy OKC Portland game last night, man. Like, I'm definitely always down to lose a couple hours of sleep when watching some great basketball. Probably one of the better first round games I've watched in my lifetime, seeing Dame drop a 50-piece and seeing him and Russ go head-to-head. That was one of the cooler things I got to see as a basketball fan. But we'll talk about that more in the pod. I'm sure you were watching that as well.
Yeah, it was nuts. Just the storyline and all that. Like you said, we'll talk about it later in the podcast. But that was crazy last night. I watched the whole game.
Yeah, man. just a 40-footer just to for game. Let's just talk about it now, man. Let's just talk about it now. So to start the game, Dame Lillard has 27 in the first quarter, or what do you have in the first quarter? 12 in the first half, quarter, I believe he had.
I don't know. I think he finished the first half with 34.
Yeah, 34.
34 in the first half. CJ was in foul trouble, so he had to kind of do that. But yeah, we'll talk about that a little later though. That's just
Okay.
How you spent your night. I spent my night the same way. It was a crazy game. But let's get into our predictions that we made a couple days ago. You know, let's start in the East. Boston swept Indiana and Milwaukee swept Detroit. You know, just starting with the Boston series first. I just thought, you know, Boston outclassed them. And it was kind of like you said in your prediction, you said it'd be close games until the end, and then Indiana just won't have that guy, you know, to take them over the top and, you know, get consistent buckets down the stretch, and that's exactly how every game went. You know, they're all pretty much close besides, I believe, game three. But then the game three and the game four, Boston kind of blew it open a little bit, but that's kind of just how that series went. What did you think about that series?
Yeah, it was just kind of a shame to see Boston just easily handle Indiana late in those games. Like, there were a couple times where Indiana was leading going into halftime, particularly in game three. And I think in game four, no, they weren't leading going into halftime in game four. But like, it was just kind of Boston just the whole time, just, you know, they had the series in control. Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown were two of the main catalysts for me that kind of helped them. For Jaylen Brown, those last two games, he was averaging around 18.3 points, and then Gordon Hayward really started to get in their groove. Anytime he had, because they were sticking Bogdanovich on him for a little bit, even sometimes Sabonis, and Gordon Hayward was sometimes having his way. So you can start to see him, I guess, really get into a groove, which is cool for him. As for Terry Rozier, another good series for him, giving strong minutes off the bench, averaging 14, 7 rebounds, and damn near 6 assists. And then Kyrie is, as always, being real steady. So I think they found their 8-man rotation right now.
No Marcus Smart, though, so it gets kind of tricky when he actually is healthy enough to come back, because their 8-man rotation that they were playing against Indiana works really well, because you play Jaylen Brown heavy minutes and you obviously always get production out of him being such a good young mm-hmm. two-way player. But with Marcus Smart in there being their glue guy, he plays so many minutes at Brown and Hayward's position that he's going to take minutes away from those two. So that's going to get kind of interesting to see when he's back from that oblique injury. I don't know if that'll be this round or the next. But
is that a guarantee for you, though? So if you're Brad Stevens, do you force Marcus Smart back into the lineup, or do, like, I would make him have to kind of earn his minutes back. Like, I understand that for a majority of the year, he was taking the bulk rather than Gordon Hayward or Jaylen Brown, but you're rolling right now and it is the playoffs. So do you jeopardize kind of losing that groove that you were just talking about? Just to make sure a guy that has been a part of the team is receiving his just due.
I mean, he's going to play regardless, and that's just another body, and that's just more minutes. That even if he's not playing 35 minutes, him playing 15, 20 minutes is different from him just not being there. That takes away from those guys' minutes. That's all I'm saying. I'm not even saying Brad Stevens is going to insert him in a starting lineup, because I don't think that'll be smart considering how well Jaylen Brown has been playing. But he's going to play if he's healthy. If he's active, he's going to play. And like I said, that's going to take away from other guys' minutes. But the thing I thought that was interesting about this series, and I kind of want to leave it here because I hate Boston, is Indiana plays really hard, you know, during the regular season, and that'll win you a lot of games. If you play hard in the regular season, that'll win you a lot of games, because there's teams that take nights off. They take long stretches off in the game. But in the playoffs, everybody plays hard. So, you know, playing hard doesn't necessarily guarantee you a victory or, you know, give you a better shot of winning in the playoffs. And that kind of showed. Indiana was a great defensive team, even when Oladipo went down. And they just couldn't get stops against Boston down the stretch because, you know, Boston was locked in. It's not a regular season contest, so it just is a different type vibe. And I thought Indiana, you know, really struggled down the stretch. It was actually, like, horrible to watch. Like, I ain't gonna lie to you, like, you know, their offense was stagnant because they couldn't score and then they couldn't get stops.
There's no one to go to. Yeah, just literally no one to go to, like no one to turn to. When you're looking at Bogdanović kind of in late in the third and late in the fourth quarters to kind of create a bucket for you, and the refs are swallowing the whistle, it's just, it looks very bleak, you know. And so you can see kind of Nate McMillan, there wasn't really much he can do. I get it, pushes
to Bogdanović is your primary ball handler, and your primary inside options are two, you know, undersized lefty, Thad Young and Sabonis, who are, I mean, they could score, but how much are they really about to give you in a playoff series? But let's get into this Milwaukee series, which also wasn't much to talk about. They just made quick work of the Pistons, who, like you said, made it a bit more competitive with Blake Griffin back. But what did you think about that series?
Yeah, I watched the last game. I didn't really watch game three just because I think that was like a Saturday or Sunday and there were other games on. But Giannis was just outstanding, man. Like, just all, like, anytime you watch Giannis, he's outstanding. But watching him that game, it was like he was on a mission kind of just to kill Detroit. Like, it was in the, so for the series, he averaged 33 points a game, 11 boards or 15 boards. And two blocks a game, which is just stupid. But he was just attacking the front court of Brooke, like of Detroit the whole time. No one could stay in front of him. Andre Drummond is probably the most overrated player in the league to me. Like, I don't, the fact that people value him as a top five big man. I mean, he is, because there aren't many big men in the league.
No, he's not. No, he is. Yeah. I was glad you were going with that point. Not top five. I can name five better than him right now. You go.
Yes, so can I. But I think to the NBA community standards, that's probably where he falls. But it's just like that the fact that you couldn't get even close to a win throughout those series is just disappointing. But in a game like that where Blake comes back and it was close until about the third quarter, and then Milwaukee started to just blow the doors off, like, it just kind of shows his lack of ability to lead a team. Reggie Jackson did have a good game that game.
Who are we talking about? Ability to lead a team. Who are we talking about? Blake Griffin?
Drummond. Because when Blake Griffin, Drummond? Blake Griffin was playing. Blake Griffin was in and out for a majority of the game. And when he was playing, he was just hobbling around. And a lot of people were giving him a lot of praise. Oh, Blake Griffin's so tough. I mean, I personally thought it was stupid for him to just be out there playing. Like, there was no way they were winning that game. And every single time, like, it seemed like he made a move, he was walking around gingerly. And for a guy with knee issues, just what's the point of just, I don't know. I mean, I understand it's basketball and you want to be out there and play, but he's your franchise guy. He has some crazy invasive knee surgery and is out for the first 6 weeks of next year. You're going to regret just risking that for 2 quarters of glory and then for him to foul out. But yeah, as I said, Giannis had 41 that game. Or yeah, it was just
41
was
in the closeout game. Yep.
Yeah. It's Reggie Jackson with 26 points. He's probably the only person on Detroit that really brought it, aside from, I guess, Blake for the short times that he was in and actually productively playing. What'd you think?
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about that series. I never really had any. I mean, the series was straightforward. We knew, you know, the Bucks would take it to them. Like you said, the Bucks dominated. Just shows, you know, playoff basketball, the Pistons team makeup is so horrible that, you know, they just had no chance to compete. If your two best players, your two big men, one's hurt, you know, he's your most talented player, Blake Griffin, he's, you know, hobbled. And then you have an Andre Drummond guy that his main strength is just grabbing rebounds, particularly offensive rebounds. Yeah. But he doesn't really have great touch around the rim and he can't really score. So, I mean, he just, you know, one of those garbage guys. And then their guard play is horrid. Like, I mean, Reggie Jackson is good, but it's about time he becomes a backup. He's not leading a team to anything significant. You know, mm-hmm. He can get hot for stretches, but he doesn't play much defense. And like I said, he's just inefficient. He's not that good of a basketball player. He's not that good of a starting point guard. And then they really have nothing on the wing. You know, yeah. Working with Wayne Ellington, Luke Kennard, you know, so you don't really have much in Detroit.
Luke Kennard looked like he didn't belong in the NBA when he was stuck on Giannis sometimes. Like, I know Giannis makes a lot of
nobody looks like nobody can guard Giannis. Like, I'm not even saying that, but it's just, you know, these wings that they have and their team makeup is they just have no chance of actually competing. And they're in that middle ground too, like where they're, you know, fighting for the playoffs. So they're in the middle of the draft. So you just don't really actually improve ever. I don't really think much of the Pistons.
Yeah. So they're financially strapped too with those two guys, man. So I don't know, without dumping those guys who no one will want and taking a majority of those salary caps, like, I don't see a way for the Pistons to become good with this given roster, like you said.
Right, right. So that leads us to, you know, the semifinals. You're going to have Boston and Milwaukee going against each other. It's going to be the Bucks. The Bucks is going to own home court because they're the 1 seed in the East. Boston was the 4 seed. Start with you. Prediction on that series.
So my prediction for that series is Boston 7. Coming off of going 1-2 against Milwaukee during the regular season, the way that they beat Milwaukee in that particular game, they had 24 threes, which obviously is an outlier. But I guess the formula to beating Milwaukee is, one, kind of limiting Giannis's activity around the rim. I know you're not going to stop him from getting to the rim, but if he's going to get his 30 points, like, you have to obviously make that as hard as possible. Have multiple guys stepping in front of him when he gets to the lane, kind of having make him shoot 6-footers instead of 3-footers. Making sure you're boxing him out. Like, I think guys like Horford and Brown and Tatum are really going to have their work cut out for them, just because when a shot goes up, like, he's lethal around the rim. And then for the offensive end, they do a really good job of kind of going over the screen and forcing guys to take twos and or challenge the big man or Giannis, whoever they're playing at the five at a certain time. I think it's crucial for – I think Kyrie's going to have to go for damn near 30 every night. Because they're going to force a lot of guys to shoot off the dribble if you want to take those threes off the screen. And I think Jaylen Brown is the last guy that I wanted to say for the Celtics offensively. He averaged, per 100 possessions, he averaged 34 points a game against Milwaukee this year in the 2 games that he's played. So he does make an impact when he plays a team like that. I think he is going to do very well when he's on Chris Middleton on that end, and then also contribute on the offensive end as well. What do you think?
So I'm kind of torn right now. I think Milwaukee ultimately wins the series.
Okay.
Just because I think they match up so well with Boston, and they're just a well-oiled machine right now. I mean, their system clearly works. You know, they're scoring above 120 every night. Obviously, they're playing, you know, they were playing the Pistons, but they've been doing it all year. They play defense, and they just match up really well. If you go down a list of guys Milwaukee throws out there, it matches up so well with what, you know, what Boston likes to do. So you have, you know, Boston's best player is Kyrie Irving, their starting point guard. Eric Bledsoe is about as good as you get at the point guard position playing defending as a defender.
Yeah.
Not saying you're going to stop him, but he's as good as you get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Milwaukee being such a great team defense as well with all that length and activity. They'll help Bledsoe out, I'm sure. Then you go Middleton and Sterling Brown on the wings. Just two guys, athletic, can score. I mean, Middleton's not very athletic, but, you know, has a good in-between game. He's going to score the ball depending on, no matter who's really guarding him, he's kind of controlling his own pace and nobody can really slow him down or speed him up.
Yep.
And then you have Giannis, who just a walking mismatch. I don't know who Boston decides to put on him. I don't know if you, I mean, I think their best matchup for him is Morris with the size and strength, but Morris is not in the starting lineup right now. So I think Brad goes either Brown or Tatum, Jaylen Brown or Baines, because he's starting Baines right now. He just played back on with Baines. I don't know
what
strategy he does.
I think it would
be Brook Lopez at the center, who's just stretching the floor for you, obviously. Taking Horford out of the paint, or Baines, whoever they decide to put on him. And, I mean, their system is just Giannis get to the rim, and facilitate or finish. And I don't really know what Boston can do to actually stop that. They've shown this year that Milwaukee's system works against, you know, Boston. They don't, like I said, they don't have anybody for the Greek Freak. And the way that team's rolling right now, I think Milwaukee ultimately gets it done in 6 or 7. I'm leaning towards 7 because it'll be on their home court. I think Milwaukee takes the first two. Boston takes the next two and their hometown in Boston. And then Milwaukee wins game 5 in Milwaukee. And then obviously I don't know if they're going to win game 6 or 7, but I think they either get it done in 6 or 7, but I'm going to say Milwaukee in 7.
Yeah.
For this series.
Just to close that, I think the way, like, because Giannis obviously is going to have the ball and be the main person attacking the rim and kicking you. I think just the Celtics do a really good job of team defense, like kind of how they guard us, where they bring a lot of double teams from various points on the floor. I think just kind of making Giannis make those, you have to make those outlet passes a lot tougher. So when he goes to the lane and kicks out to like Brook Lopez, Brook Lopez just floats around the top of the key, and same thing with Middleton. They leave so much space in the paint for him to just kind of get to the rim. You just have to make sure that pass is a lot harder than just him just throwing it out there and it's just wide open for a 3 for Brook Lopez. And so I think Boston will do a good job of that. And so we'll really get to see where Giannis is mental at, because Brad Stevens will just throw a lot of corkscrews in there for him. So if he can handle Boston, and I know I said Boston in 7, but if he ends this series in like 5, which he's totally capable of doing, and just totally just dismantling Boston, then I think that's going to make a real statement just to kind of where he is in the pantheon of basketball right now, for the current players. That personally would just fault him to number 2 to me currently in the NBA, but we shall see.
Number 2 behind?
Behind Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is, I think, as I said before, like just still the best basketball player on the planet in the NBA. Like if I had to pick one guy, just overall, but we'll
see. Just making sure. Yeah, so last thing on that series, you know, Boston can throw their double teams at Giannis and, you know, Brad Stevens and all that. But what I was going to say is, I will say this, in a game 7, I might be leaning towards a Kyrie over Giannis just because of style of play.
Yeah.
You know, Giannis is everything to the rim. If you can really contain him for a game and maybe misses a couple bunnies and maybe he can't get to the rim as easy as possible, Kyrie can get that perimeter game going. And you know what happens when Kyrie's perimeter game going gets going. He starts making shots. You got to come out and play him. Then he starts getting past you and finishing everything at the rim. And then it just gets real demoralizing for the defense. So
yeah.
That's why I'm thinking six in my head, but I'm going, my prediction is going to be Bucks in seven. But let's move on.
Yeah.
For Milwaukee and Boston. We laid our eggs there. Toronto won. Toronto defeated the Magic 4-1 in their series after Orlando won the first game. Surprised everybody. Toronto won four straight to win that series. What's your prediction?
Yeah, not much to talk about that series.
Not prediction, my fault. What did you think about that series?
Yeah, since Thursday, the last time we recorded, like, Orlando was just 98-93. That was kind of the last close game. And then from there, 107-85, 115-96. For me, the two guys that I keyed in most on, as everyone else, are Pascal and Kawhi. Pascal had a 30-point performance in that game three and the 24 last night. He's becoming more and more just of the perfect Robin for Kawhi. On defense, on that end, like, whatever side Kawhi is on the floor, most times Pascal's on the other side, just locking it down. It's really tough for just the wings, the opposing wings, to get going and rolling when you have two guys like that just harassing you the whole night. So for Orlando, like, Terrence Ross, like, he would have a good game. Like, he had 24 points one night, and then the next night Toronto just threw Kawhi on him every time he checked in the game, and then he had five. So that just shows you how good they are as a unit. Well-oiled machine. They move the ball really well, and then Lowry kind of seems as if he's woken up since game one. So it's all bodes well for Toronto going into the round two versus the Sixers. I don't take much stock into the games against Orlando, though, because they were a very weak seven seed, in my opinion. I think we personally would have swept them, but then again, that's just here nor there. What did you think?
I don't think, like I said last time on here, I don't really think necessarily Orlando was a weak seven seed. I don't think they were, you know, as good as we've seen in the past, but I think they have a lot of guys that can individually make plays and score the ball. Vucevic is a very efficient, highly efficient, you know, big fella that can score around the rim. Got a nice outside game. He can shoot from the perimeter. So you never know. He can get going and give you 30 and 15. And they got some guys that can score the ball from the perimeter. You know, Terrence Ross, Evan Fournier. Even Michael Carter-Williams is playing better this series. You know, getting the ball to the rim, making plays. DJ Augustine and his veteran leadership and experience. So, I mean, they have a solid roster out there in Orlando. They have a lot of youth. I don't know how I didn't name Aaron Gordon, but, you know, he's in the mix too out there.
Yeah.
They have a lot of youth mixed with, you know, some older guys. And they have a pretty bright future. But Toronto made easy work of them. Siakam and Kawhi got going. And, I mean, those two just look like one of the best wing tandems in the league just because of all the length, athleticism, and the fact that they play both ways.
Yeah.
Don't really have much to say about that series. Kind of went the way I thought it was. I had Toronto winning in five, and they did. So, like I said, not much there. That's really surprised me. The next round is what I'm more intrigued about.
Yeah. So let's just talk about our Sixers series. We also closed out last night versus Brooklyn. Went on a 14-0 run to begin the game. And then from there, it was just kind of cruise control, ending the game 122-100. What were your thoughts on that game? I'll let you go first.
I mean, it was over quick. Like you said, started 14-0. I think it was 20-2, something like that. They had like 2 points, like 9 minutes into the quarter. Brooklyn completely tapped out after that last game, which was good to see. We broke them. Like, we made them break. You know, they tapped out. They surrendered. It was a good sign to see us just dominate them throughout. I think we were up 35, 40 points at a time. So just dominating. I saw a stat that said we were up at 29 at halftime, which is the biggest halftime lead we've had in over 30 years. So, you know, I mean, just, you know, little things like that. We dominated them. Yeah. You know, we dominated them in game five, and that was good to see. I'm happy it didn't go down to the wire. Just a great sign to show that we've locked in and we're kind of coming together as a team, like Brett has been saying in the post game press conferences. Tobias has woken up this series. You know, Jimmy, we get Jimmy when we absolutely need him. 36 in the first game, and he kind of calmed down after that. But not to say we didn't need him, but everybody really was going. So, you know, the shots aren't there as much, and he's just, you know, being a great teammate, and definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, this contract situation this summer, to see if he's a max guy or how we try to go about that, because, you know, he like Embiid always says, he's our closer, and that's really seems to be his main role in this team now, because Joel Embiid is pretty fucking good. He'll get you through three quarters.
Yeah.
Especially with Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons and JJ Redick on his hip. Best starting five in basketball right now.
Yeah, when we're rolling.
Not counting the Warriors, obviously, but
like, as you referenced,
like the best starting five in basketball.
Like in games 3 and 4, four obviously Butler was ejected, but like just having Butler go down the stretch, or when things kind of just get slow, like put that Butler and Embiid screen and roll, or just having Butler operate from the wing late game is just perfect. Exactly what we need. Like exactly what we're missing from last year. If you compare it, just what we always say, to the Covington and Saric, is having a guy to turn to when Ben and Embiid's, their games aren't very conducive to late game when refs swallow the whistle, because their games rely a lot on being around the rim, getting foul calls, getting to the line. Jimmy Butler doesn't have to do that. So having him is like, without him, I don't know what we do next year, you know, because Tobias Harris isn't really that guy. So if we lose that, we kind of have to revert back to Simmons or Embiid late game. And so if one of them either matures and is able to kind of carry,
I mean, Embiid late game isn't hard, isn't that bad.
Oh, I'm not saying bad at all.
You know, he starts turning the ball over. But it's just tough when you have Ben Simmons on a roster, because Ben doesn't shoot. So it gets so congested at the end of the game. Like, if I'm a coach, I'm throwing a double team, throwing a triple team at Embiid to end the game. Cause it's like, all right, make Ben Simmons beat me from the perimeter. Yeah. That's what I would do. And that's what made things tough last year. Like you said, with the Covingtons and the Darios, the guys that were more reliant on the pass to score. It was tough. Like you said, I don't know what we do without Jimmy Butler, because it's so vital to have that guy that can score from three levels. And if you ball screen for him, the defense has to go over top, and then he gets in the middle of the. You saw that's all the Nets ran on us, because they have guys that can shoot the ball. We have to go over top of the screen. They get in that intermediate range, and they start playing. They start playing with the ball. You either can take it to the rim, you can back them out, shoot a three. You can do anything. The options are endless from there.
Yeah.
But just having Jimmy Butler in that position, in that role, and just being a guy that doesn't turn a ball over. Like, I don't know if people notice about him, but it's like, if you look at his turnover numbers over his career, it's actually kind of crazy. He doesn't turn the ball over. And you kind of can see it. When he does turn the ball over, he's like demonstrative on the court, because he hates turning the ball over. And I love that in a guy that's your primary ball handler. But into the good stuff, Toronto, Philly, next round. Let's get it cracking. Who you got, Toronto, Philly? I don't even know if we have real opinions on this, because we're kind of about to just say how we think Philly can win.
Yeah.
But
what you think? Stepping away, like you said, from the analytical side, as a fan of basketball and the Philadelphia 76ers being the team that I support, I think a fan of me says Philly wins this series in six. And the recipe to winning that is exactly how we beat Brooklyn. It's going to have to go through Embiid to begin the game. Obviously, the front court is a little bit more formidable with Serge Ibaka and Marcus Gasol. And sometimes they'll even throw they'll probably throw Siakam on him at times if they go small, which is a stupid decision on my part, in my opinion. But
on who?
On Embiid when they decide to go small. Because I think that'll be – that'll be one of the lineups that they try to throw out there to just kind of get Embiid off of the floor. But I think it, as I said, starts to Embiid and work inside out. We're going to need Simmons to kind of just facilitate, because if he tries to do too much against Kawhi will force you into mistakes, as we've seen earlier in the year. So I just need Simmons to play within his game. I don't need him to go crazy like he did game two against Brooklyn. I just need consistency. I need a low turnover rate. And then I just need him to rely on Tobias and Jimmy to kind of power us through the series. Those two will need to have the biggest series and both be within the 20s each game for us to beat Toronto.
Every game. Yep, because those two are so important, because of Kawhi and Pascal. They're going to produce for them. Those two are both scoring 20-plus, Kawhi and Pascal, every game. So we need Tobias and Jimmy to be what Dario and Cov weren't, like we just said. And that's always the difference in this team. That's what makes me so much more confident in this team. And that's what makes this team so much better built for the playoffs than that team last year, because you have guys like Covington, you know, Saric, Bellinelli, Ilyasova, guys that are not as skilled as Jimmy Butler, as Tobias Harris. So in the regular season, they're playing so hard, going all out, and you might win more regular season games. But this team is so much more well-suited for the playoffs because, like I've been saying, we're top-heavy. We have so much talent in that first, you know, first five, and then those three guys that come off the bench are just, you know, being, you know, staggered with the starters. So that's just so important. I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but that's so important for Tobias and Jimmy to produce, like you said. Ben can't let Kawhi speed him up. I don't know who they put Kawhi on, but Ben cannot let him speed him up. I'm thinking with Joel Embiid, they probably match his minutes with Marc Gasol. So I'm thinking Joe got to get in the best shape he can possibly get in, because we need him 30 to 35 minutes a night. Just giving it to Marc Gasol. I think he's too old to stop him. Joel Embiid's too physical of a force. I don't really think anybody in the league can stop him. I don't think Marc Gasol should be able to. And Marc Gasol has had success in the past as compared to other bigs.
He'll be able to force him out away from the block a little bit more. I think what I've noticed, the veteran centers, the LAs, the Horfords, the Goberts, not Gobert necessarily, because Embiid cooks him, but they are able to push Embiid like 2 or 3 feet away from the block. So he starts his post up in that kind of mid post area. And so he's very effective from there, but obviously against Jared Aaron, he was just burying him every single time he had. So I think that's where Gasol will kind of have the advantage, as to where other centers aren't really able to do that with Embiid. But,
I'm looking at this Raptors box score from last night. I mean, obviously they're playing the Nets, but Kawhi 8-for-11, 5-for-5 from 3, 6-for-6 from the line, 27.7 boards, a plus 38 from the field. And then you got Pascal Siakam 24 points, 8-for-16, 3-for-5 from 3, 5-for-6 from the line, 6 boards, 4 assists, 20 plus 22. I mean, these guys, both 32 minutes, they're dominating. They're on the wing, they're dominating. But where I think the X factor in this series is the little chubby point guard from North Philly. The dude chokes in the playoffs. You know, he's either going to give you, you know, last night he was 14-9 assists, 6-for-10 from the field, a plus 31, where he's just being that, you know, that floor general, you know, making plays, or he's just super tentative out there, shooting five shots, scoring no points, scoring, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 points. And he can be that guy. So that's just important to keep an eye on for the series. If I'm making my prediction, I don't really have a prediction for that. Like we said, I think Sixers, if we win, it has to be in 6. I don't think we go to Toronto and go win that game 7. So we have to steal one. Toronto's horrible in game 1s. So,
yeah.
Hey, there might be an avenue right there. They might, I don't know if it's the team, but they take a while to adjust the team. So, I mean, we're better than the Magic. You guys win game 1, when you get back to South Philly with the series tied 1-1 or us up 2-0, Toronto may be in trouble. So let's leave that there. Going a little long on the East here. Let's get into the Western Conference. Houston's making quick work of Utah. Utah won game 4 pretty handily towards the end. Donovan Mitchell got hot. And then you got Golden State up 3-1 on the Clippers, having the Kevin Durant, Pat Beverly thing going back and forth from the Clippers, you know, auditioning for a free agent or whatever. So it looks like those two will face up next round. If there's anything you have to say about those first two rounds, I mean, if there's anything you have to say about those series, let me know. But I think Houston, Golden State next round. What do you think about
that? Yeah, as you said, let's just skip right over it. Let's get into Houston, Golden State, because that's the series I think every NBA fan is keying in on, is kind of the series that will determine who will win the finals. I'll give my thoughts first on just Houston, and then you can kind of go in on Golden State, and then we can pick our winners. Houston looks just locked in, man. Coming off of last year, real heartbreaking game 7 loss to Golden State. Just even in that loss to Utah the other night, like, Houston, just the way they swing the ball, and they're able to get their shots. At the start of the year, I will admit, like, I was one of the people that was just like, this system seems to kind of be, it's just hunting for threes is one of my least favorite things to see on the basketball court, but they've perfected it, man. Like, it never seems like they don't get wide open or clean look. And Utah is a really good defensive team, although they do rely heavily on Gobert, and he's kind of just been taken out of this series because they do so much perimeter work. But it feels like not even just Harden, like PJ Tucker has been getting wide open looks from the corner all series. Chris Paul, wide open looks from the top of the key. Like it just seems as if Houston is now at the point where their offense is unstoppable. Even when Harden is going over 15 to start, the rest of the offense still continues to move, and they're still in a game. And that just kind of scares me a lot. Especially seeing them play a team like Golden State. Like, you're telling me if Harden can be checked out, like if Harden obviously can't be checked out against Golden State, but if Harden can be checked out and you're still in it against the team, that just shows you, how well they're run and how well they're coached. As for the series, I'll give you my prediction now. I have Golden State. Still, Golden State in seven still. But I'll explain more. You just kind of give me your overview of those two.
Yeah, so, like you said, Houston looked locked in. You know, Utah, you know, one snuck game four out of there. The Utah got their, you know, the morality win. But he, like you said, Houston looked locked in. Golden State, after losing, after giving up a 31-point lead in game two, they seem to lock back in these last couple games against these Clippers, who are really, you know, pesky or whatever. So, a prediction for the next round, I got Golden State in seven. I think Golden State ultimately wins that game seven. I'm taking Steph Curry, Kevin Durant over James Harden, Chris Paul. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson over James Harden, Chris Paul. As good as those two are, as good as Harden is, there's just a little bit more room for error for Houston, in my opinion. Golden State is just, they're a juggernaut. I mean, they're a dynasty. They know how to win, obviously. They know how to lock in. Draymond's, what, dropped 23 pounds before the playoffs. He looks much better. Looks like he can facilitate much better. He can be that. He's making his threes now. I mean, like, they just look much better. I'm saying the series goes seven just out of respect for Houston and what they've done and their system and James Harden's greatness, just pushing it to game seven. But in Oracle, Golden State pulls that out in game seven and moves on. I thought I'd have much more to say about this series, but I kind of want to see how it plays out. But I think it's going to be one for the history books, because it's going to be the second round this year. And not the Western Conference Finals, so both teams are going to have a lot.
Yeah, judging from both of our predictions, because we didn't talk about this before the podcast, it's just kind of, it seems as if Houston has to prove us wrong. Like, it's hard for a team to come and change my mind and basketball perspective on a series after I've seen Golden State kind of been able to deal with different types of adversity over the past 4 or 5 years. Like Houston has to show me something, like, where if shit begins to go south and Harden, and we go over 27, or Harden isn't rolling and isn't getting 42 against the top tier team, what can you do then? Like, are you going to rely on Chris Paul to kind of lead you out of a game? Like, there's just, like, as you said, there's more room for error. Like, Golden State could play four or five different styles and still beat them and beat Houston. But there's only one way Houston beats Golden State, and that's hitting 14 to 15 threes, Harden going for 40.
Also,
great game from Chris Paul. Clint Capella has to be catching everything around the rim, guarding Draymond. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be so many different factors that all hit for Houston to come out with the win, where it's just Golden State. It's like, all right, you have to stop Kevin Durant. And then if you slow down Kevin Durant, then Steph Curry also can't be rolling and facilitating as well as he does. It's just, there's too
many. Right. I get it. I know what you mean. So what I would say is two things. One, with Boogie being out and Bogut starting games for them, Bogut's a facilitator, you know, and in Oracle, he's just screening and getting guys shots, you know, brush screening, finding stuff on a cut or whatever the case may be, just being a facilitator, not even worrying about scoring. And he's protecting the rim better than Boogie could. So I think Golden State will, you know, really get off the good starts in this series just because of the Andrew Bogut factor. You know, he has the experience with those guys. And, you know, they really turn it up a notch in the playoffs. And the second thing is, if Golden State wins the first two, you know, I'm confident, you know, I'm confident they win the series. You know, they just have to win two of the next five. You know, if they win their first two and cover home court. And then also, if Houston steals one, say Houston steals game one, like that's not going to sway my opinion. Like, I still think Golden State has faced adversity. They can go and still win four of the next six. Like, just with that comfortability factor of Golden State being able to have their backs against the wall and really respond. Last year, they were down 3-2 and came back. Just that, you know what I mean? That's just why they're my pick. You know what I mean? Like, Houston can win game one, Harden can get 59. Houston win game one, and I'm still sitting there like, all right, well, you know, KD knows it's time to go. Steph knows it's time to go. Klay will probably give you 40 on 10 shots. You know what I mean? So, that's just kind of how I'm looking at that series. It should definitely be a great one. It should be a great series. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of mad it's turning around. But let's move on from that. Anything else to touch on?
No, not at all. Let's go right into the bottom half of that bracket. Last night we were able to... Yeah, we saw...
So you got Denver.
Yeah,
Denver, San Antonio. Denver took a 3-2 lead on San Antonio last night. My prediction was Denver in seven. I'm still standing by that. Unless Denver locks in and gets it done in San Antonio in game six. But it's looking like Nuggets and seven to me. What do you make of that series and the way it's going?
Didn't get to watch the back end of that game last night because watching OKC Portland. But from the looks of it, Denver has begun to find their groove. I know we've said that a lot, but the Jokic-Murray tandem has really started to get rolling. They threw Gary Harris on White for game four and was kind of able to stifle that. Like, White had 36 in game three, powering the Spurs forward. But Denver right now is just, like, they're doing what they were doing in the regular season. I know my prediction was Spurs in six, but that was kind of the belief that San Antonio was just going to be outplay them on a game-to-game basis. And Murray and Jokic, as I said, have woken up and have just begun to perform and really started to take it to the Spurs guards and for and LA and Jacob Pertl. I don't really have much more to say on that series. I hope it does go seven just because I think it's a great display of basketball and it'd be cool for us to see Pop, I think, one last time, just kind of going up against a top tier team. And then I guess I'll just review that OKC Portland series, but what do you think, San Antonio and Denver?
Not much to say about that series. One thing I can say about the Spurs, when they get DeJounte Murray back, they're going to be really good because, you know, young 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", point guard, you know, mix him in there with Derek White, and then you got DeRozan, obviously, and Aldridge. When Pop gets his full arsenal of guys, they're going to be a pretty good team moving forward with their blend of youth and experience. Denver looks good. They look like they've been looking all season. Like you said, they found their groove. A lot of guys touch the ball. They move the ball. They have a good system. I think they ultimately move on, like I said, to play Portland next round. But, I mean, this is what I've been waiting for. Best series in the first round by far, even though it was 4-1. Russ versus Dame. Portland versus OKC, the big dogs, big point guards, you know, the elite point guards of the team, the elite point guards of the league battling. What did you make of that?
I am so
serious, guys.
Yeah.
Or I'll go first.
If you go first, and then I'll just bring it in.
All right, man. So, I mean, a lot of people listening and a lot of my friends think I'm a big Russell Westbrook hater. And the thing with that is, a guy that plays as hard as he does, the passion, the love of the game, the joy he plays with, you know, at times, I mean, he's angry a lot, but, you know, the passion he plays with, I can do nothing but respect that. But that only takes you so far. That only takes you so far. There's so much more to the game, and that's just shown here for the third straight postseason elimination, just being eliminated in the first round. This year with arguably the more talented team, Dame came to fucking play, dog. Mm-hmm. He came to hoop. This series, I tweeted yesterday, when you see two guys facing up against each other, when you compare two guys, you can compare what they do to the rest of the league. But once you see them go head to head, that's where you really make the that's where you really decipher who's the better, you know, one-on-one player, and you can see whose skill and whose impact on the game is more. And if this series doesn't show you that Damian Lillard is a better basketball player in 2019 than Russell Westbrook, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I can't really get to an even playing field with you if you cannot see that Damian Lillard's impact on the basketball game is so much more than.
Well, explain that a little bit more in comparison to the triple doubles, because everyone likes to just gawk at that.
So that's the art. Just throw the time. I'm not saying a word about triple double. I don't care about that. Like, I'm tired of the triple double talk. I'm not even about to address that. Like, if you're still looking at triple doubles and thinking, you know, that's the best thing since sliced bread, then you're outdated. These guys are getting the shit like it's nothing. My thing with the way their impact and their skill level is, Damian Lillard's out there hooping. So he's out there setting a ball screen. First off, if the center sets a ball screen on me, or a five man, the four man, whatever, sets a ball screen, and their man has to switch or double, the defense is already at a disadvantage. And every time Damian Lillard comes off the ball screen, that has to happen, or he's going to let it go from 35 feet. It's going to be all net, and it's demoralizing to the defense. And if you switch too late, he splits the defense. He's out there making reads. He's out there being a hooper, using angles, using his handle to get to certain spots on the court to make plays. Russell Westbrook isn't making any reads. He's just out there playing off instinct. And he's been playing like this his whole career. There has to be a point where you adjust. The Chris Pauls, the Rondos, the Currys, the Lillards, the Kyries, all these guys play and they use angles on the court. They're using their handle to get to certain spots. Russ is just 100% going right at you. I'm either shooting a freaking pull-up three or pull-up mid-range, or I'm going all the way to the basket. There's no swiftness. And that's why every time you see Russ crossing somebody over or he euros somebody, he's showing you, because he doesn't do it often. Yeah. This shit doesn't happen often because he doesn't play like that. You know what I mean? And there's something I saw, you know, from a couple years back where he says he doesn't watch film. You know, he's just worried about what he's doing. And that's just a horrible mindset. And this shit is all coming out on display here. Damian Lillard killed him. 50-piece nugget, sidestep to end the series. I mean, all the antics him and Schroeder had after game three, you know, rocking the baby and saying it's Dame time and all that. Dame had the last laugh. And that this series was just so – I just hope people – it's more apparent to see now that Russell Westbrook isn't really up there with these elite dudes like Russ, Dame, and Kyrie. Yeah. I mean, Dame, Kyrie, and Steph are on a different level than Russell Westbrook. And that's what this series,
like you said,
the playoffs have shown me so far.
Like, yeah, that was a perfect soliloquy, kind of just displaying of how Russ isn't, I just think he said, on the same level as these guys. But like as you said, after that game three, like with Russ and Schroeder having all those antics, you would think that you would have the self awareness to say, listen, this is just one game, right? We're still down in the series 2-1. We have to win another game at home before going into Portland. So you have all that. And then, so you come into game four, you lose that game 111-98. Damian Lillard, in comparison to Russ, has 25 in the third quarter. If you're just looking at from a box score perspective and you're not watching the game, having 25 points in a third quarter is so key and pivotal leading your team going into the fourth. Like, you understand, like, a lot of guys feel a lot more comfortable going into the fourth after watching that. Like, just so as just it says, as a team perspective, like, because they know Dame is going to let them up.
Wait. Question real quick, because I got kind of confused. Was the 25 points
right after all of game four? Yeah. So after all of the chitter chatter, that was game four. like going five, like,
yeah.
Like, it's just, it's incredible to me. CJ McCollum also contributed well in that game, 27 points. So then you lose that game, and now the series is now down 3-1. And just from like a media perspective, like Russ is still doing the whole next question thing, yada, yada, yada. And that doesn't affect anything for me on the court. But then to come into this game, and then like for me personally, like he had a good close of the game. Like if you tuned into the second half of the game, you saw Russ going crazy, 5-point run, hitting threes, keeping the Thunder in it, having the Thunder go up 9 or 10 points. But if you watch the first half, like he was 1-for-7 from three, forcing up a lot of shots. The Thunder could have pulled away multiple times. But then it's like almost like Russ gets into these personal battles when he sees Dame doing something and going for 34 in the first half. It's like he almost has to kind of respond to that. And if you see. Yeah.
Bro, he plays basketball so childish. It's so crazy because it's like, It's like, you're so good. Like, your talent, I wish I had your talent in athleticism. Like, he's so good, but he just plays basketball so aimlessly. Like, he's really making... Bro, yeah. Do you remember last year with Rubio? He was guarding Ricky Rubio in the backcourt like he was playing pickup at the courts. Like, he was just outside. He was guarding Rubio, like, face guarding them because the media was saying Rubio had a better game one than him.
Like, and it's like, you don't have to do that. And for me, it's really a testament to how much of a, or how little control Billy Donovan has over that team. Like why is Russ just kind of seem like you said, like he's doing anything out there? It's like, it gets to a point where it looks like it's pickup basketball.
Anything.
Everyone's just standing around waiting to see what Russ is going to do. He'll just make his move. He can't get to the basket. He's going to kick it out to Paul George. And another thing for me is, like, Russ is awful off the ball. Like, there's multiple times last night where the ball is on his side of the floor and he's making it more congested because he's just standing there watching. He's like, all right, well, if you're not going to do nothing, give me the ball back. And it's like that kind of mentality. It's like it starts to become wearing on teammates, and teammates are starting to look at you like if you're like walking on eggshells. Like, Nerlens Noel checked in early in the fourth quarter last night, and two straight poor possessions. Like Russ gave him a good pass, and he missed like an easy gimme, and then the second one Russ forced the pass late and kind of just looked at him and walked down the court.
Russ drove in. To clarify that real quick, my fault. I saw that too. The first one, like you said, he dished to Nerlens. Nerlens missed the bunny, but you can hear on the audio on TV, you can hear Russ yell at him. Like, Russ yelled at him. Obviously, you know, passion in the game, you know, it happens sometimes, whatever. But the next play, he came down and tried to dish it to him again, but he one hopped in and hit his knee. Like, he threw a horrible pass and hit his knee. And Russ kind of stayed there with a horrible body.
So you instantly lose Nerlens. Like, you know, you instantly lose Nerlens now for the rest of that game. A guy that is able to give you good minutes, but that's not a big thing. And then late in that quarter, like, you start to see again when Dame starts to heat up, like, Russ is like, all right, well, if Dame is doing this, like, I got to hit it. Like, Russ does hit a three. They traded threes when Dame hit the step back, and then Russ hit one another thing at the other end. It's more of like, why not just get the best shot available? Like, and sometimes I know you're wide open, but like, there are other guys on the team aside from you and Paul George, and Russ is kind of in that mentality where it's like, it's got to be us two. We got to lead us to the promised land. And I'm not saying like Ferguson or Grant are going to be the guys that are going to step up and have massive fourth quarters, but like, the whole aspect of basketball is a team game. Like, you saw when they were doubling Dame, like, towards the end of the game, like, Maurice Harkless had a great fourth quarter. He had like 8 points in that fourth, just because Dame was so willing. He's like, all right, like, I'll dish right down to you. Like, if you want to cut baseball after the double team, bang, I got you. Easy. Gimmies. Like, I'll let CJ operate. Like CJ hit the one of the biggest shots. He tied the game at 103-103 because they doubled Dame and left the right cross, and CJ has all the space in the world to operate. You know, and there's a willingness, like.
And then even when, not to cut you off, sorry about that, but even when, you know, they're going ball screen and Dame has the ball and they switch and Russ switches off him and gets on Cantor, and then Dame has the big on him. Dame's not forcing with a big man or not shooting no contested three. He threw the ball right to Cantor. Cantor, go get a bucket on Russ. He's too small. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing the game out. Like, he's actually mapping the game out. All right, picking his spots. You can't, at the point guard position, you can't just play off instinct.
Especially
just
when you're going against a guy as calculated as Lillard. Especially, like, I think, like, if you, I wish there was a stat to show you the plus minus against a guy, like, against the individual, because Russ's plus minus against Dame Lillard would just be in the deep negatives. Because it seems that every single time Russ makes a bad play, Dame makes a good play. And it's not to bang on Russ, but, like, your eyes can tell you if you watch this game, like, Russ was starting to crumble before your eyes, and every single time it seemed like Dame stepped up.
So two things I want to touch on to end this. It's Paul George and the way the rest of the team. I want to actually hit the rest of the team first. So a lot of people would say, oh, no, Russ doesn't have help. He doesn't have any, like, help him. You know, a lot of guys can't create or whatever. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Dennis Schroeder, 7-for-10 last night. Raymond Felton, 1-for-2, 50%. Nerlens Noel, 1-for-4, didn't really have a big night. He missed a couple of bunnies. Ferguson was 1-for-1, hit his only three. Steven Adams was 5-for-8 from the field, about 63%, 62%. Jaren Grant, 7-for-8. Paul George, 14-for-20. So, I mean, guys around him are shooting well. What did Russell Westbrook shoot last night? 11 for 31. 33% once again in the closeout. I mean, this shit is a nonstop cycle of horrible shot selection. And I mean, 29, 14 assists, 11 boards. Everybody goes, triple-double, triple-double. The ball's in his hands the whole damn game. He played 45 minutes. Yeah, he's going to have assists. He's only driving to score, or he's going to kick it off if he doesn't have it. That's how he played. So you just can't, people, my main thing is that you can't fall in love with this triple-double. And don't tell me he doesn't have guys around him that are going to help, because guys are efficient around him. Grant was 7 for 8. Steven Adams, 5 for 8. Schroeder, 7 for 10. Paul George, 14 for 20. Everybody's shooting well besides you. So you can't, you know what I mean? You can't say, oh, blah, blah, blah. And the last thing I wanted to say is Russell Westbrook is rubbing off on Paul George, man. And that is just horrible to see, because they're grown men. Like, they're grown men. They're at these conferences, these press conferences, and last night Paul George ended it just saying, Damian Lillard, horrible shot. That's a bad shot. I don't care what nobody says. Yeah, not that a bad game. Shot. He can make a shot from there. He made a couple of that game. You've seen Dame play all year. Like, he can make that shot. Don't tell me it's a bad shot because he let that shit go in your face. Like, don't tell me that. And then the next question, shit, he was doing and shit because of Russ. Like, come on, man. Like, it's just pathetic to see. But, I mean, that's what he chose. He didn't go to LA. And now you're stuck anywhere else. He wanted to play in OKC.
Yeah, for me, like, it's just like
two more years of this.
I'm at the point now where if you're a Russ fan and you're an OKC fan, you now have to explain to me as to how this team is still an elite team. Like, there has to be a conversation now. Like, as if this Russ shit is really working, right? Because to me, like, if I'm the OKC GM, like, it's like, all right, we've given you all this leeway for the past 3 years because KD left and we wanted to make this your team and we invested in you, but things have to change. Like, there has to be a change. You can't lose 3 straight years in the first round and still be considered, like, you still are the franchise guy, but you can't be considered the guy that, like, all right, we're going to go as you go. Like, you kind of have to now buy into what we're trying to build here. Like, I don't know if the system changes or the coach changes, but they have to get somebody in there to where, OKC looks different. And if Russ decides to play like this for the rest of his life, like, this is, in my opinion, looking at you as a basketball player is severely going to taint your legacy. If you're a guy that can never get out of the first round, like, I don't care about 82 game regular season. Like, I care. It means something.
Yeah, it's over for him, bro. It is. I'm not even going to lie to you. He's 30. You know, Broussard compared him to Iverson the other day. Iverson was my favorite player growing up. I probably would have looked at Iverson a little bit more critically if I was a little older watching him. But I just love the dog Iverson had and all that. But, I mean, he's 30. He's not changing. He's not 25. He didn't have, you know, a coach to change his style of play in his third, fourth year in the league. What he's done is he's accustomed to it. He's bought in. What coach can really come in and tell Russell Westbrook, you know, don't do this? He averaged a 30-point triple-double, and everybody guessed and said they gave him an MVP because of it. So, you know, shooting 40% from the field, they gave him an MVP. You know, 5 turnovers a game, they gave him an MVP. So, I mean, the media then gassed up this triple-double. So, you know, he's accustomed. He's stuck in his ways, and I kind of want to leave it there for now, man. I'm the biggest Russell Westbrook hater. Not really. I just tell it how I see it, and y'all not about to. And NBA survey came out this year, and all NBA players, they voted, and Russell Westbrook led the league in most overrated. And I sat there and I said, damn, that's kind of crazy because Russ is elite. Like, you're not going to call him overrated. The dude is overrated.
Yep. Makes sense. But as you said, we're going to try to close this up. Wasn't the most analytical episode from TNT Hoops, but we just wanted to kind of wrap up some of the stuff we saw from the past 2 or 3 games of the playoffs. We're going to give you an actual TNT Hoops episode, I think, this Sunday when round 2 begins. Thank you guys so much for listening. Quitty, lead the people out.
Yeah, like Ansel said, pretty much touch everything. We kind of just wanted to keep putting out content during the playoffs and keeping you guys updated on what we think about these series. When round 2 starts on Sunday, me and Ansel will get right back into that and, you know, readdress our predictions and kind of talk about those series a little bit furthermore. So like he said, thanks for listening. Subscribe. You know what I always say, tell a friend to tell a friend. TNT Hoops. 1.